I'm starting this recording again. Starting this recording again because I was not recording it on the video. This is the kind of thing that can happen, and regretfully, it can happen 12 minutes into the program. A cancer, we began by saying the cancer was the most ancient of the signs, and it was influential in the first part of the earliest solar system, just as Virgo was influential in the second part of the previous major solar system. What we have here is an understanding that this was a sign that was recognized as an influential factor by ancient humanity. Now, if a source of great energy is to be recognized, then that ancient humanity must have been intelligent. So we assume that this must have occurred in minimally in Lemurian times, after individualization occurred, and perhaps to some extent in Atlantean times. There was a time when eight signs of the zodiac were recognized as influential, 10, 11, even 12. This is the more modern understanding that 12 are influential. Always there would have been 12 constellations, a circle of 12 constellations within the one about whom naught may be said, within the heart and the head center of the one about whom naught may be said. Because it is a heart center, it would be 12-fold. However, early humanity may not have recognized these influences. And because of that, even though these energies were available, they would not have been part of the lore, part of the understanding of the early human beings, unless, of course, this knowledge was conveyed by the teachers, by the god kings, as it were. So anyway, let's see here. 2013. Okay. So I've written in some of these things because I was discussing this a little bit earlier. I state a basic truth here, vaguely acknowledged by you, that is, by us, the reader, that in Aries the essential substance of manifestation, I presume, in a way, either on the cosmic physical plane, or in a sense on the lower or on the lower 18 cosmic subplanes, awoke to renewed activity under the impact of divine desire. Now, from a certain point of view, the substance of manifestation can be considered the etheric and physical, dense physical levels of the cosmic physical plane, which, in a sense, we can say are ruled by Gemini and Cancer. It seems that Gemini has a close connection with the etheric nature of all kinds, whether the microcosmic or planetary logoic or sotologoic, and that Cancer has a close connection with the dense physicality of the lower 18 subplanes, systemic subplanes of the lower 21 systemic subplanes. So divine desire, where does that come from? Well, presumably we're talking either about the desire of the individual monad, or we're as mediated through the soul. Or we're talking about the desire of the planetary logos considered as a monad mediated through the planetary logoic soul. Or we're talking about the divine. Every time the word divine is used, it is indicating that which relates to spirit or the monad. So the desire of the solar logos mediated, we would say, through the sotologoic soul, and bringing into existence the solar system. So we are looking at the cardinal cross here and rather large considerations. We do have lords of constellations involved here, and they certainly can influence the life and vehicles of a lesser being, such as the solar logos in whom we live and move and have our being. So substance is awakening to renewed activity under the impact of divine desire. We can say from the cosmic astral plane, impelled by the divine breath, by the divine life or spirit, coming from the cosmic mental plane, but really instigated by the monadic nature of these great beings. There would be no soul on any level unless the monad of the being who possesses the soul had instigated the activity and in some cases called in the assistance of solar angels of whatever scope, whether the microcosmic solar angel or the more macrocosmic solar angels related to the planetary logoi or to the solar logos. There is a great being, we understand, who provides the causal or egoic expression of the solar logos, and it is a prototype of all of the lesser solar angels that do the same for what the Tibetan calls a microscopic man. So substance is awakening to activity. It can be the substance of the cosmic physical plane, or it can be the substance that is forming the cosmic lower mental body, the cosmic astral body, and so forth, the cosmic etheric physical body. Because in a way, manifestation is occurring on all the 18 lower cosmic subplanes, not only on the cosmic physical plane, but what we usually call manifestation is dense cosmic physical, or when we come to think of the human being, it is the dense systemic physical, the lowest three subplanes, the gaseous, liquid, and truly dense mineral subplanes. So the essential substance of manifestation awoke to renewed activity under the impact of divine desire. From one perspective, we can consider that from the cosmic astral plane, impelled by the divine breath or the breath of the soul, by divine life or spirit within the causal body of the planetary logos or solar logos, but impelled by their monadic nature. There's always a sense in which Aries can be associated with the monad, because from the monad comes that original impulse of going forth, and Aries is always that which goes forth into new experience. So from the monad comes the original impulse of going forth, which correlates this act of the monad with the sign of going forth, i.e., i.e., Aries. Okay. Going on then, in Cancer, this living substance assumed a triple differentiated relationship. Now, we can be thinking of Cancer in relation to the entire personality of the solar logos. We can do that. Cancer can relate to the entire personality of the solar logos or the planetary logos, just as it does for man. Cancer, yes, is related to the dense physical body of man, but also the four elementals of the human personality, namely the mental, emotional, and physical elementals, plus their union as a fourth or personality elemental. These are related to the fourfold sign Cancer. So it can be considered thus in relation to the planetary logos or to the solar logos. In Cancer, this living substance assumed a triple differentiated relationship, to which we give the names of life, or Aries, of consciousness Taurus, the sign next to Aries, going in the counterclockwise manner, and manifested duality Gemini, the sign preceding Cancer. We are really looking here at the subjective personality nature of any entity, whether it's the solar logos, planetary logos, or simply a microcosmic human being. In which case, Aries represents the mental sphere, the lower mental and perhaps higher mental, Taurus, the astral sphere, the astral body, and Gemini, the etheric aspect of physicality, Cancer, the dense aspect of physicality, but in a way, the entire personality. Cancer seems to it's a fourfold sign and seems to integrate and include them all. From another point of view, a larger point of view, we can look at Aries as the impulse of the monad, which at its center holds life or is life. Taurus, the factor of consciousness, the light of the soul of whatever being we're talking about. And Gemini, the personality nature, or at least the subjective aspects of the personality nature, more the activity side, since it is the third sign. So you see, we're talking about large cardinal cross issues here, and we are relating them to a number of different kinds of entities. Yes, you know, it's kind of interesting. You can even do it this way. You can look at Aries as representing the monad, Taurus as representing the light of the spiritual triad, the spiritual will, the wisdom, and the luminosity of the triad in its triadal mind, and then Gemini representing the dual soul, an aspect of the soul which remains on its own plane and an aspect which is put down into manifestation. And the lower aspect of that is given embodiment by Cancer. All right, and the manifested duality of Gemini, the side preceding Cancer, and these three blended together. Okay. There are ways to relate the different signs to different factors within different beings, and it's always possible to relate Aries to mentality, Taurus to astrality and to the desire realm, and Gemini to ethereality, and Cancer to dense physicality. So whichever level of being we're considering, the being came into outer manifestation in the sign Cancer, thus completing an esoteric quaternary of great importance. DK has told us that the first three signs are indeed subjective. But what he means by subjective is that they have not emerged into a dense manifestation in Cancer. They are the substance. They are that which substands the dense externalization that we achieve under the third and seventh ray in Cancer. So the esoteric quaternary can be considered in the life of the microcosmic man, planetary logos, solar logos, and beyond, of course. So this is the first major fusion. The person has not really come to himself, maybe the being has not. So it's inchoate fusion and unrealized, thus it took place. And the fourfold elemental man was prepared for his journey of self-realization and initiation. Now, you see what he's doing here. He's going through the four cardinal signs, and he's considering them from a cardinal or cosmic perspective, but we can pick up the esoteric hints as they would relate to microcosmic man as well. So here is the first major fusion. Later to be, in Libra, the personality nature which has been formed, the personality nature of whatever entity which has been formed, reaches a point of balance. But with what? Balance out of a somewhat static equilibrium. So the equilibrium is between the consciousness aspect, which is, in this case, ruled by Taurus, and the activity or matter aspect, the Gemini Cancer aspect. So Cancer is ruling consciousness, and the terminology for consciousness is soul. Soul is consciousness. There are some people who think of the soul as an entity, but it is really an entity displaying a certain limited type of consciousness. And later we understand that the triad has consciousness, the monad has consciousness, the planetary logos has consciousness, meaning they all have soul. So we have to think of soul in a larger sense than the somewhat limited microcosmic meaning we have given it. So we reach this static equilibrium between consciousness and and matter, activity matter. So let's call it that. It's a stasis between consciousness and activity matter. Let's call it that. It's to be disturbed in Scorpio when the balance is forced to shift to the consciousness aspect and matter, activity matter is subdued with the defeat of the Hydra at whatever level this Hydra is manifesting. So that this essential triplicity appears clearly in relation to each other. And what will this appearance be? It will be the emergence of the articulated threefold personality. And we say, really, fourfold when considered as a unit. Now we go to another one of the cardinal signs. It's Capricorn, and it's the sign of initiation, and the basic triplicity, which is personality in various limited modes of consciousness. Let's call this personality in various limited modes of consciousness. This basic triplicity begins to return to the earlier state of the breath of spirit, but this time with full awareness and properly fulfilled organization, so that form is a perfect expression. And there we come to the seventh ray of Capricorn and the seventh ray, giving us the perfect expression of form. So the form is a perfect expression of the soul, and the soul is sensitive and responsive to the pulsations of the one life. Now note here, this word pulsations, it has much to do with the activity aspect of the first aspect of divinity. The first aspect pulsates. And sometimes we talk about the jewel in the lotus, which is represents the first aspect of the egoic lotus, and its type of influence is that of pulsation, which animates the various petals. In fact, we are told animating eight petals particularly through this pulsation. So sometimes we want to know, how is it that the first aspect moves? What is the movement characteristic of the first aspect? It is pulsation, just as there is a great first aspect involved in the human heart, which pulsates as it pumps the blood of the life through all aspects of the corporate vehicle. So what do we have here? We have the basic triplicity of personality within its various limited modes of consciousness, returning to the breath of life, but it is a conscious return. Let's put it like that, a conscious return, and properly fulfilled organization, so that the vehicles are no longer inchoate, but represent in well-articulated form the intended purposeful relationships, these are intended by the designer of the entire system, or let us call it the monad, the relatively speaking all-seeing eye. So that form eventually works out this articulated purpose in full consciousness. So the third aspect of divinity, it reaches the desired expression, and the second aspect of divinity consciousness also reaches the desired expression and sensitivity. So the soul becomes sensitive and responsive to the pulsations of spirit. That's where we are. of the one life. The monad is always the one life. It realizes itself to be a special case of the one life, and yet the one life, in a way, in its entirety. And that life reveals through its activity the perfect will of the Logos. Will, intention, purpose, these can be used as equivalent terms. Will, intention, and purpose. Okay, so let's see what we have here. Okay, so let us go then a little further. We've been looking at the cardinal cross. He does tell us, somewhere he uses the words creation for Aries, manifestation for Cancer, legislation for Libra, and initiation for Capricorn. Maybe it's in this chapter. We will see. The secret, so-called, of the cardinal cross, secret to those who do not yet share that type of consciousness. The secret, so-called, of the cardinal cross is the secret of life itself. I don't know if we can really call it an aspect of divinity, the life aspect. Perhaps it is the very essence of will, the essence of consciousness, the essence of activity. It's the point within the triangle. The secret, so-called, of the cardinal cross is the secret of life itself, just as that of the fixed cross is that of the soul, or the mystery of self-conscious entity. How does one become limited in consciousness when compared to the monadic self? How does one consider oneself as a one instead of an all-inclusive many? Of course, the soul is also group consciousness and group conscious. So eventually that insularity of self-awareness, self-estimate, which is occurring on the personal levels, gives way to the group consciousness of the soul. Whilst the mutable cross holds hid the mystery of form. This word mystery or secret, it has to do with all the things we do not yet know about the development of these three phases, that is, form, self-consciousness, and life, or let's call it will, purpose, intention. Life is somehow even greater than those. Let us call this will, purpose, and intention. The true atmic aspect, the first expression of what is more fundamentally life, which is the essence of all of these. Life is being. Being is the great internal essence which has produced the three aspects of divinity. So anyway, but he uses the words life, quality, and appearance, or in this case, life, consciousness, and form. In these words, you have the key to the secret of manifestation as a whole, and to that mystery which was revealed to Christ at the final crucifixion. Now, you know, watch that word final, because in a way it was not the Christ that was crucified. It was Master Jesus that was crucified. But perhaps the what is the final crucifixion? Is it, in a way, the sixth initiation, when you have to give up your well-trained will to the will of the Father, as was done in the Garden of Gethsemane? Or was there an overshadowing of the Master Jesus by the Christ passing through the sixth degree, when something was revealed to him at the crucifixion of Master Jesus? In a way, the or the initiate Jesus. In a way, the Lord Maitreya had undergone his own type of crucifixion as Krishna, the death of Krishna, something like 3102 BC, and he was His physical form was killed by many arrows. This was what he passed through. So anyway, that mystery which was revealed to Christ at the final crucifixion, and to which he testified his understanding reaction in the triumphant utterance recorded in the New Testament, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Now, DK seems to be talking about Christ and Jesus in the same breath. This is interesting, because it should have been the Master Jesus who had said this, but perhaps the consciousness of the Lord Maitreya at the sixth degree is overshadowing him as he is coming to these realizations. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? It can be the story of that deity we call the solar angel returning to the heart of the sun and leaving the crucified one in possession of his true monadic nature. So when we talk about the Christ, we cannot say that he then left the fixed cross. We'd have to say the Master Jesus left the fixed cross, and yet this has to be more closely examined. The Master Jesus left the fixed cross, but at the fourth degree, neither the fixed cross or the cardinal cross applies. So we are told in a more elaborate context that there is an immediate, there is a type of consciousness here which is neither that of the fixed cross or the mutable or the cardinal cross. So indeed, one can say that one leaves the fixed cross as one is approaching the fourth initiation and takes that fourth initiation not on the fixed cross and not on the cardinal cross either. And this we have, I think, discussed. So let's just say that Jesus, overshadowed by the Christ, left the fixed cross behind, and the identity which has hitherto been his, and identified himself with that which was then revealed, and we can say through the departure of the solar angel. Through the departure of the angel of the presence, Age of Pisces, that won't do, angel of the presence, as it gives way to the presence or monad itself. In the fuller light of the monad revealed as the angel departs, there is a great realization. To these words, thus translated somewhat inaccurately in the Christian Bible, and DK can read the records to tell us of this inaccurate translation, there are three meanings or true significances. And the translation hinted at in the secret doctrine is the following: the robe, the beautiful robe of my strength no longer serves. What are we talking about here? This is the robe is the causal body. It gave strength, and it no longer is sufficient to the coming revelation. This robe expresses the inner revelation of the mutable cross as it was revealed to the Savior. Of course, in a way, he knew this. We have to say it has to be revealed to the Master Jesus within the consciousness of the Christ. As it was revealed to the Savior, looking at life from the angle of the soul. We are told that on the cross there dawned upon the soul of the initiate Jesus a certain understanding of the great struggles of humanity, which for him constituted a kind of dark night of the soul at some point upon the cross. In the words quoted above, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? The mystery of the fixed cross was shown to him, and the secret of the cardinal cross was for the first time held before his eyes. So basically, the solar angel departs and allows a vision of the cardinal cross. The words embodying that central mystery have never yet been given out. The question is, did the Master Jesus, under the impulse of the Christ, it seems that the Christ must have somehow maybe participated with him, at least in consciousness, going through that great fourth initiation. One wonders as well of the possible ways that the Buddha may have participated with the Lord Gautama, the Buddha being taking the sixth initiation, and Gautama taking, in a way, the great renunciation. In a way, Gautama was one of the arhats, we might say, except that the Buddha was using his vehicle, the great Buddha, who had been 2,500 years the head of the spiritual hierarchy, was using the vehicle of Gautama to teach the other arhats. So the robe of my strength, this is material, and it relates to the structure of the causal body and to all of the vehicles that have been used over the years, which are essentialized within the content of the causal body. And then the God who forsakes is the solar angel who underlies the causal body and is that highly developed consciousness which has nurtured the upcoming human consciousness, but now is no longer needed because the human being can step into his own right. So the mystery of the fixed cross was shown to him, and the secret of the cardinal cross was for the first time held before his eyes, but no words are given. This is the central mystery, and the cardinal cross concerns life, and it certainly concerns the divine purpose, will, and intention. So they have not been given out, and one wonders, were they spoken from the cross? Maybe not. If they were, they were not recorded. One of the factors which distinguished the Christ from all preceding world saviors was the fact that he was the first of our humanity who, having achieved divinity, and this many have done, see, this is a monadic life, was permitted to see the golden thread of light and living life, which links the light within the center of all manifested crosses. This is a profound statement, and the great Lord becoming a unique type of world savior, a kind of world savior that would stay with humanity for 5,000 years, was able to see the triple synthesis, we might say. He, the Christ, was able to see the triple synthesis. Now, this is because he was passing through the sixth degree. And therefore, there is a relation to the number three. He could see how monad, soul, and personality are all related, because the sixth degree connects him with the monad. Of course, others have achieved divinity, have achieved monadic nature, but it was to be his task to, in bodily form, link all these three aspects and demonstrate all these aspects to a striving humanity. Amazing. He was allowed to know the meaning of life as it expressed itself in the cosmic crucifixion, which is but an episode of cosmic life, and not death, as is generally supposed. And so what is the, goodness, cosmic crucifixion? And, you know, this has to do with that of the planetary logos or the solar logos. We know that the planetary logos is passing, and the planetary logos, who is a cosmic being, is passing through a type of fourth initiation. on our planetary chain and globe. And correspondingly, the solar logos is in his system passing likewise through a type of fourth initiation. These are not necessarily the great cosmic initiations, but they are subsidiary initiations. At least in the case of our planetary logos, it is subsidiary. And probably through our planetary scheme, the solar logos is likewise passing through a type of crucifixion in which there will be a freeing from the legacy, material legacy of the previous solar system. So he was able to understand the cosmic crucifixion. This seems to suggest a solar logoic, let's see if I can make that any better, solar logoic consciousness. Now, not that the Christ had solar logoic consciousness, but was able to glimpse something of the solar logoic process, solar logoic process, and certainly that of the planetary logos, and to see how he was participating, to see how he was participating in the crucifixion or fourth degree of the planetary logos. Now, this is the fourth degree with respect to our chain. We have to realize that planetary logos, our planetary logos, having not yet taken his second cosmic initiation, could not be conceived of as taking now the cosmic fourth initiation. This is something that will happen later in the Mahamanvantara and before the end of the Mahamanvantara. Minimally, that will have to take place because our planetary logos has to serve in a strong will aspect. The solar logos as the base of the spine center, a chakra of the solar logos. Well, okay, so Christ could understand something of the great cardinal cross and the cosmic crucifixion, the way in which the Son of God, the soul of the solar logos, is crucified in all of the cosmic matter that has to be redeemed. And I suppose this can be said of the planetary logos as well. That great soul crucified on the 18 lower cosmic subplanes, his personality, nature. So there's a... It's kind of a fixed cross in a way for these great entities, and yet from our perspective, it's called a cardinal cross. Now he's going to give us a contrast here. He's going to say, Hercules comprehended the true meaning of the mutable cross. These are all of the struggles of the soul expressing as a personality, and with full knowledge, mounted the fixed cross with its attendant difficulties and labors. So the labors of Hercules occurred on the microcosmic, on the microcosmic fixed cross, on microcosmic fixed cross, because Hercules had to prove himself as a soul in personal circumstances. He was not a disembodied soul by any means, but he had to work through the three lower vehicles. He had to work through the three lower vehicles, circumstances. It's very interesting to consider these three great teachers. He's always considering them together, and in the Destiny of the Nations, we understand he's even giving their rays, interestingly enough. And all of them are possessed of the sixth ray in one way or another. Very interesting. Now let's see what we have here. Okay. The Buddha comprehended through complete illumination, not just the illumination of the third degree, not even the illumination of the fifth degree, the meaning of both immutable and fixed crosses, for the secret of revelation in Taurus was his. Now, I think, you know, we're looking here at, remember here that Aries is life and Taurus is consciousness, all on a very high level. The Buddha did not have to work through these exacting, trying circumstances, being tried as a Scorpio would be tried, as Hercules was tried. Hercules is definitely identified with all the tests and trials of Scorpio, and the Buddha had right away greater illumination and did not need to go through all that. He had gone through that earlier. So he understood both the mutable and the fixed crosses, and his complete illumination, I believe, was the sixth degree. Cosmic, mentally aligned. Whereas the sixth degree of the Christ was cosmic, astrally aligned, and, you know, of course, one could speak of cosmic Buddha here as well, but it would just be speaking of cosmic Buddha. Certainly, there was a touch of a cosmic astral plane for us, a becoming seventh degree initiate. So the Buddha comprehended through complete illumination. There's that word complete, and even the initiation of revelation, the fifth, is not complete. It has to be, must be, monadic illumination. Must be monadic illumination. And as the Buddha was a third ray monad, there would have to be a touch of the cosmic mental plane. So this is the sixth degree, cosmically mentally aligned illumination. Okay. So Hercules, the mutable cross, the Buddha, the mutable and the fixed crosses, because the fixed cross is the cross of illumination. It's the cross of the soul as light, but also the soul as love. Just as the secret of directed energy in Scorpio was the source of the strength of Hercules. So directed energy in Scorpio, there is an excellent combination of words to be remembered. Remember these. What goes on in Scorpio, there is directed, purposeful, willful, courageous, valorous energy. Illumination, however, is the energy which can be directed towards revelation in Taurus. But the Christ, knowing both the above secrets, well, in some ways it seems that he had not traveled as far as the Buddha had, but in other ways he was privy to various revelations that the Buddha had not apparently yet achieved at that time, although we cannot say what it was that the Buddha may have achieved at this time, at the time the Christ was achieving these, because it was indeed later. Okay, so because the Lord Maitreya became the Bodhisattva around 500 BC, when the Buddha relinquished that post. So as the Lord Maitreya developed, certainly the Buddha was developing as well. The Christ, knowing both of the above secrets of the mutable and fixed cross, also understood with a living comprehension. This just hints what the Christ knows, and you know, realizations far beyond us, of course. The mystery of the cardinal cross, because the light of the transfiguration undergone in Capricorn revealed to him the glory and transcendent mystery. But what type of transfiguration? What type of transfiguration? the transfiguration, of the normal man? No, he had achieved that long ago. So it was the higher type of transfiguration, which is represented by, well, let's see, one, two, three. Well, it's certainly represented by one of the higher degrees. There are different ways we can count this. In a sense, the transfigured initiate in relation to Sirius is the seventh degree initiate. The transfigured initiate in relation to the solar logos is the fifth degree initiate or master. There is a kind of a solar transfiguration there. And with respect to the planet, there is a planetary transfiguration. But the glory of the transcendent mystery is not just that which is revealed at the third degree. It may have been reenacted by the Master Jesus, who had taken this initiation as the high priest Joshua in an earlier incarnation. But perhaps the presence of the Lord Maitreya was needed there for that reenactment, and who knows, it may have been the Lord Maitreya himself in the body of the Christ, in the body of Jesus, that was reenacting this transcendent mystery, perhaps putting him in touch at that third degree demonstration with the sixth degree through which he would have to pass in the Garden of Gethsemane, and perhaps overshadowing Master Jesus at the fourth initiation. It's also said he began the process of the seventh initiation. These initiations are separated by a great number of years when we come to the greater, larger initiations. As I've said, you know, there's this hourglass figure in a way, and the earlier initiations are far apart, but the second, well, let's just say the earlier evolution has stages which are far apart, but the second, third, and fourth are rapid, and then the fifth, sixth, and seventh, and beyond, I suppose, stretch out over a great number of years. So, you know, you always have to read between the lines here, because otherwise we accept things as at face value. We do realize that all of these things the Tibetan was talking about, the Christ passing through, he had passed through long ago. So was it a reenactment? Was it Master Jesus passing through? Was it the Christ overshadowing Master Jesus, helping him pass through, and somehow aiding in the dramatization of these stages? So there's much to be explored in these words. Well, yes, we continue a bit. I had, as I said, spoken for about 12 minutes without recording anything, which was really intelligent. So now when we reach about 1 hour and 12 minutes, it will be the end of number 96 here, at least 96A. There are two words also which convey the purpose and intent of expression upon the cardinal cross. Basically, it's interesting. DK has waited until discussing cancer to really discuss the cardinal cross. You know, he could have begun in Aries with that type of discussion. He could have, we've already been through the sign Libra. We've been through Capricorn. He could have discussed it then, but he waits until the very last description of a cardinal cross participant, namely the Lord of the Constellation Cancer, to discuss the fuller implications of the cardinal cross. Maybe by now he feels we've gotten a good feeling for what the fixed cross is, and he can begin to discuss these larger spirit matters to a type of consciousness which may understand something. So, two words which convey the purpose and intent. Notice how purpose and intent are included, and we might include the word will. I always like to think of life expressing through, if I can say, life expresses through purpose, will, and intention. So they give the reasons why the two doors of the zodiac open wide to the impulse and demand of the divine spirit, you know, spirit incarnating and spirit seeking freedom. So the door or the gate in Capricorn opens wide to the spirit having been incarnated seeking freedom, and the door to Cancer opens wide to the spirit seeking incarnation through the soul and its extensions. So one of the words is self-preservation, interesting, which leads to the impulse to incarnate in Cancer, which is the door to physical plane expression of spirit. Self-preservation, well, you know, but what is the self? The preservation of being. That is the true self. Now, we have much different definitions of self-preservation on our lower level. We usually think of it, as the preservation of the form. So when we talk about survival and self-preservation, we're talking about keeping the forms through which the spirit manifests in a coherent condition, keeping them, these forms, intact. So self-preservation is said to lead to the impulse to incarnate in Cancer, which is the door to physical plane expression of spirit. The preservation of selfhood in form and the preservation of the forms through which selfhood manifests for as long as spirit or self intends that manifestation to occur. All right, this impulse, when the form is the prime object of attention of the soul and that with which it primarily identifies itself, brings about the stage of static concretion in the earth sign Capricorn. So we have this urge to incarnate leading to concretion in Capricorn. DK is going to deal with these polar opposites as he goes on talking about descent into matter and reascent towards spirit in terms of the polar opposites. So self-preservation, at least that is the type of consciousness which takes over in the what's left of the consciousness of the incarnating spirit when it manifests through a personality. And the door of Cancer opens wide, and there is a static concretion reached from which it would seem that no more progress is possible unless it is progress upward. And so Capricorn represents the diamond-like figure, and there is a low point of concretion leading upward towards a point of release at the upper end of the diamond. The other word is immortality. It's two such important words. So let's look at these words and let's put them in big letters. So self preservation and immortality. Two words in relation to the cardinal cross. The other word is immortality, which is the divine aspect of self-preservation. Self-preservation, as we see here, is being largely used in relation to the form. It's not really, it's the preservation of that which the lower consciousness thinks it is. It's the preservation of the misidentification and the vehicles which foster this misidentification of being consciousness with the form. So the other word is immortality, which is the divine aspect of self-preservation. I suppose it, in a way, it's going to have more to do with Capricorn. It is the major conditioning factor in the creative process. Well, the creative process, once the man begins to become intelligent. Let's see, once the man becomes intelligent and is rising, and leads to the whole revelation of evolution, the unfoldment of the form in such a way as to reveal soul and spirit, the funfoldment, don't you think? Unfoldment of the form so as to reveal soul and spirit. I like to capitalize spirit. I know the Tibetan doesn't do that. I mean, and you know, the editors have to decide what to capitalize and what not to capitalize. So it leads to the whole revelation of evolution, the seeking after immortality or the return of spirit to its own essential state, to the recurrent appearance of life in form in order to promote that etherealization of the form and thus its ability to receive and express the higher energies, hence its unfoldment, and to the revelation of life in form. And the more sensitive form is, the more it reveals the true life aspect, the closer it comes to regaining its highest state. In Capricorn, at the third initiation, this life aspect assumes primary importance, though I would say, though not necessarily most power, because the soul nature is coming to a climax and has still the greatest power. Okay. It's amazing, you know, when you have to go over this text step by step, we see how much the Tibetan has put into it. Oftentimes we just read, and word for word, we're not careful enough to see what word for word truly reveals. Okay, well, we are getting there. Why don't we together say the great invocation at this point? I'm going to just say that this is a ending, end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 96. I will call it A, because I think I'm going to go on and be able to do a bit more, but I like to draw the line somewhat at these hour-long presentations. And page 316. Right. So let's just do the great invocation here, in case this gets divided up. And we go. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men, may Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, so we are at 96A, and we can say beginning Esoteric Astrology 96B. That is my hope. And on the 3rd of May, 13, page 316. It's such a wonderful book, and it's a wonderful book. But it's a wonderful teaching altogether, and it's all one big book, and the different parts of it have to be interrelated, and in the interrelating of these parts comes that synthesis in the mind which reveals the wholeness of the teaching and which evokes the intuition. The intuition is that which ties all aspects of the teaching together, but we have to set that up in a Mercurian manner so that the different parts of the teaching are brought into juxtaposition with each other. Then the light can flash forth, let's call it in a way the Uranian light or the higher Mercurian light. Then we will be able to see the wholeness of the teaching, quite an amazing thing. Of course, we're not there yet, and nothing I do is coming really close to it, but I hope it's tending in the right direction. And when I think of, you know, these ongoing commentaries on esoteric astrology and really on so much of occultism, it is my hope that it gives a way of associating aspects of knowledge in such a way that they produce a flashing forth of the intuition and a seeing of the whole picture. It is my hope that that is what happens. Well, I'll just take a little break here, but I'll put this on pause, and then we will be able to proceed further with this wonderful chapter on Cancer. I wish I understood the sign Leo as well as I understand the sign Cancer. We'll see. Okay.